paper 14, section 5, which is old single column, page 158. Okay, so now we're rolling towards the end of this paper. There's a lot of great stuff in this section, though. And then we have the great big long section at the end, which, depending on how it goes tonight, we may have to sort of break in the middle and finish it up the next time, because it is such a long section. But they maybe I'll just mention up front. It came up last week also. They're going to briefly touch on what happens on each circuit, you know, of the seven circuits of Avona, as we're going through this section. It'll definitely, you know, leave you wanting to understand more about how that all works. And the reason it's so cursory here is that the main discussion of that is forward in, what is that, paper 26, I believe, about the, where you have the tertiary and the secondary supernafim. In other words, the paper right before they describe the primary supernafim. And it's the secondary supernafim, the angels in the central universe that are the offspring of the master spirits that take assignments of guiding pilgrims, either descending or ascending, pilgrims, on a particular circuit. Yeah, so they're specializing for the time being while they have that assignment to the tasks of a particular circuit. And so in the context of going through those different working classifications of the secondary supernafim, they really give you a lot more of the details of the story of working your way through Avona. Yeah. They're just going to touch it on it here, and I'll try to bring out a little bit of the perspective that's more immediately relevant to here, as opposed to just all of the details of how you go about going to paradise and trying to recognize the infinite spirit and all those details like that. We won't get into that. But if you want to, after this, brush up on those details, just go to that, that series of sections. There's one section for each of the different, working categories of secondary supernafim, and you can remind yourself of some of those details. All right, so let's just jump in.
Five. Life in Havona. On your ranch here, you pass through a short and intense test during your initial life of material existence. On the mansion worlds and up through your system, constellation, and local universe, you traverse the Morantia, phases of ascension. On the training worlds of the super universe, you pass through the true spirit stages of progression and are prepared for eventual transit to Havona. On the seven circuits of Havona, your attainment is intellectual, spiritual, and experiential, and there is a definite task to be achieved on each of the worlds of each of these circuits.
Okay, so let's just pause there a second. This is a great example of how they're actually tying what's going to be talked about here to those passages I was telling you about up there at the secondary supernafim. One of the first things they mention there, too, is this exact same threefold series here, intellectual, spiritual, and experiential. Or another way to think about that would be quantitative, qualitative, and supreme. Okay. And so when you're saying, experiential, you should immediately think, oh yeah, okay, I'm engaging experiential deity. I'm engaging some expression of God the Mother. In this case, of course, it's God the Supreme as God the Mother. Hence, an alternative for experiential in this context is Supreme. Okay. And the other thing about that other way of saying the, you know, that pattern of three, quantitative, qualitative, supreme, is to remind you of something that you're going to see as we get into this. You know, think quantitative on the one side, qualitative on the other side. Oh, I know that. That's like individuality, unity. Okay? So, you know, engaging your individuality consciousness on the one hand, quantitative. Engaging your unity consciousness on the other hand, qualitative. And weaving the two together, just like the Supreme is a power personality synthesis. Okay? Weaving those together experientially to acquire a measure of supremacy, lowercase s. You know, the divinity of the Supreme level, as it were. Okay. So you'll see them alluding to that when we go forward. But just right up front, if you're familiar with the revelation, you'll go, wait a minute, that's that same series, and they brought in that other way of saying it, and they must want me, if I'm a more advanced student of the revelation, they must want me to be thinking about that combination of the two and the super additive consequence.
Life on the divine worlds of the central universe is so rich and full, so complete and replete, that it wholly transcends the human concept of anything a created being could possibly experience. The social and economic activities of this eternal creation are entirely dissimilar to the occupations of material creatures living on evolutionary worlds like Urantia. Even the technique of Havona thought is unlike the process of thinking on Urantia.
Okay. Now, notice in the middle, social and economic. And then we won't really flesh that out because the next paragraph is going to really bring that into full play. But, economy, the word economy, what does it mean? Eco-nomy, what does that mean? That pair of words stuck together. Okay? Nomy means laws, like astronomy, okay? Astronomy, the laws of the stars. Okay, nomi means laws. What does the eco mean? I mean, literally means house or domain. It's the laws of the house, the laws of the domain. Okay, you've gone all the way up to the central universe. Have you finally realized Lucifer's dream of a lawless domain? No. Yeah, there are laws of the house. And in order to get into the house, you have to be able to perfectly, naturally conform to those laws or forget about love. God can't pour his love into a vessel with no walls because that is not a vessel, okay? What is a vessel without walls? You know, it's nothing.
Sieve.
Right. The walls of that vessel, you know, the laws of the house, the economy, the economy. Okay, so social and economic. It's not just some vague, fuzzy spiritual domain, very definitive, concrete domain. Now, we've alluded to part of this before about. Just how dissimilar this is, like they're describing. And this is the important part of keeping the individuality, associativity, unity thing in your mind constantly as you're going through this and trying to understand. Like we've pointed out here, we work our way up. And notice they reminded you of that. The very first paragraph was curiously reminding of your ascension process in a lot of detail. Seems kind of odd, You know, even reminding you that you have this initial morontial domain of the local universe, and then you have the spiritual domain after that. And well, you know, why are they wanting to get that all in my head? Because you have a two-stage process of going from your initial individuality, that we understand just sitting here in this room, up through associativity to unity. You do it in two stages. You first do it fully immersed in a morontial context. Individuality, associativity, unity. There's three levels of the local universe.
The word morontia, didn't you say that that means baby in place or something? No, place?
No, it's that which is akin to matter.
You said more baby or something.
No,
I wrote
no.
that on one of my notes.
No, no, more, other people have rationalized like that. What it literally means, more means matter. On is akin to, you know, and then the TIA is making a noun, an impersonal noun, because it's a T, not an IA. So, you know, how would you, it's that which is akin to matter. Okay. The reason for that is, let me just go ahead and explain that. Above, you again have three levels at the super universe level. Individuality, associativity, unity, minor sector, major sector, super universe capital. Okay. That lower level, the minor sector level, that's the individuality or material level. Remember, you learn all about physics of the cosmos there and things like that. You learn about individuality in a true sense there. And the domain below that stems from that. Remember, things are coming down from above. So you come down from unity through associativity to individuality, and then there's an expression below that predicated on that minor sector level, the material level. What's below it is that which is akin to matter, the morontial level. Okay. And there's three levels in that again. You have unity, associativity, individuality. Okay? So you're working your way up, you know, in kind of a matter, mind, spirit vertical hierarchy that we all very much appreciate. I have a material adjutant mind, you know, and it's seated on literal matter, on my brain, okay? And I'm striving up through that associative domain of mind towards unity. I'm trying to found myself in beauty and work my way up through truth towards goodness. Okay. And my whole ascension career in the local universe and super universe are just like that. What's initially just an internal phenomenon is literally this very large-scale external phenomenon of working up like that. And so you finally get up to the super universe capital, and you've accomplished that. You've gotten up to a solid unity relationship. Okay. And now you put that down under your feet. When you go into Havona, that unity that you've achieved becomes your new foundation, your new starting point. And now you do the reciprocal phenomenon. Like we were pointing out last time. In there, you're starting with goodness and going up through truth towards beauty. In other words, you're starting with unity, a full, genuine unity, the more, you know, wishful thinking of unity, because you've achieved it through hard work. You start with unity, and through associativity, you're going up to an individuality that we can't even imagine. An ability for your absolutely unique personality. How much more individuated can that be? An actual nature that will allow that absolutely unique personality to finally express in an incredible transcendent individuality that's not even remotely possible right now, because you're not individuated enough. There's a limit to how much that absolutely unique personality can express, because you're just barely up out of the ooze yet. You know, you're just kind of part of the background fog still, okay? You're very, you know, loosely individuated right now, you know? A little wisp in the fog right now. But that personality is working, trying to bring things together into a focus. And it finally can really get to that task when you get to Havona, and are liberated from the shackles that have been holding it back for all that long ascension. Okay, so when they say even the technique of Havona thought is unlike the process of thinking on your engine, that's what they're alluding to. Right now, like I said, I mean, my basic thought domain is reaching up towards goodness. It's going to be the reciprocal there. The whole process of thinking is the reciprocal of what it is here. There, goodness is a given. It's my starting point. You know, like for the Havona natives, it's just literally built into them. You know, they didn't even have to choose it at all. They're perfectly good to start with. Okay? And so we join in parallel with them in the process of trying to reach up from that unity foundation to the individuality destiny that our personality has been foreshadowing for so long. Finally liberated and can really bring you together into an incredible expression of that unique pattern that God bestowed upon you oh so long ago. All right, so that's the basic picture. Now let's see what they say about that economy issue.
The regulations of the central universe are fittingly and inherently natural. The rules of conduct are not arbitrary. In every requirement of Havona, there is disclosed the reason of righteousness and the rule of justice. And these two factors combined equal what on Urantia would be denominated fairness. When you arrive in Havona, you will naturally enjoy doing things the way they should be done.
Okay. So, the regulations of the central universe are fittingly and inherently natural. Okay, and at the end there, you will naturally enjoy doing things the way they should be done. Yeah, so they repeat that naturally. Like I was just saying, this has to be just your unwavering nature. Okay? Mm. What is that one requirement that we've talked about that, you know, that gets you into Havona? You have to have perfection of
purpose.
Perfection of purpose. Mm. You know? In other words, you have to have gotten all the roadblocks out of the way of your will perfectly purposing yourself. It has, you know, the self hasn't done everything it's going to do. I mean, that takes for all eternity. Okay, but you've gotten, you've fully mastered the self. The will engages the self and then produces a purposed self. You have a perfectly purposed self. And again, okay, now all the roadblocks are out of the way. Now we can really start to do something, says the personality. Yeah? Now that we have no self issues anymore, perfect self-mastery has been accomplished in getting up to, in our case, Uversa, perfection of purpose. And then in we go. Okay, so you are very definitively ready to engage the economy, the laws of the house.
Does that sort of purposing mean that we will have chosen a career?
No, because there really is no such thing. I mean, for instance, as a finaliter, you have tasks. You know, you work on this assignment, and then you're done with that task, and then you go to a different task. You know, you have to be able to do anything, basically, requested of you. So that's why it takes a lot of education, a lot of maturing. And again, it's very important to recognize that that process of a purpose self. Like, you know, when we think about that in our case, self-mastery, we have this agitated self in the lower domain of the hourglass. That's an unpurposed self. Doesn't matter how delusional it is, it's not purposed. Okay? It may think it is, but it's not. Okay? The personality engages and is working on trying to bring that mindful self up into the upper domain of the hourglass, the house within, the heart. And there's laws of that house. There's an economy of the upper domain of the hourglass, too. Not any old thing can go up in it. It has to be like the cosmos to be up in there. It has to conform with the cosmos, the laws of mom's house. Okay? You know, and the extent that you can get some of yourself up in there, it's like the cosmos, my initial tiny little degree, of course, to start with, but it's like the cosmos. It's gone from a mere self to a purposed self. You know, so you aren't necessarily thinking of anything that you've done externally at all. You've gotten to the point where what's going to do something is something that's consecrated to the harmony that is the cosmos. You know, and only then should you really want to be doing something too profound. If you haven't made sure that you're in harmony before you start applying zeal, who knows what you're going to do. Okay? You want to make sure you've purposed what you're going to apply before you start applying it. You know, because definitely you'll get the opposite effect of what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. If you haven't made it right before you use it. Okay? So that's what we're talking about, you know, is getting right with the cosmos, perfection of purpose. Not just will, but will has been, you know, made into purpose, purpose itself. Okay, and and notice in the middle there, in the even, you know, and these two factors combined. They got two factors, and they're wanting to combine them. What did I say right up front? You know, where they're wanting you to get, you know, quantity and quality, individuality and unity. See, and look at the pair. The reason of righteousness and the rule of justice. Okay? The spiritual consciousness and the material consciousness. More to the point here, take it up to a higher level, the unity consciousness and the individuality consciousness. And the unity consciousness, the reason of righteousness. Notice it's not just some sort of a vague notion of unity. You know, it's in full reason mode. You're thinking unity. Okay, the reason of righteousness. Okay? And the full rule of justice. You know, applied law. So you have those two, and you've brought them together. And they're saying, well, now, how would you understand that? You know, in an initial way from what you've experienced. Well, the word fairness will get you started in the right direction to understand, you know, those two factors combined equal what on your end would be denominated fairness. But they italicize fairness. Why? Let me think. Maybe it's because they don't want me to think too simplistically about the word fairness. Maybe they're trying to emphasize it, challenge me. It's like, well, what kind of fairness are we talking about here? Well, we are talking about bringing, you know, unity and individuality together into a harmony. That's called cosmic flavor. Oh, it's cosmic fairness, not just mere second level of meaning fairness, you know, that a 3-year-old starts to blurt out, okay, that's not fair, okay, not that kind of fairness, okay, cosmic fairness, okay, and once you say it like that, cosmic fairness, and you don't have to have it, but I just want to remind everyone, this little handout I created, you know, years ago, some examples of some cosmic facets, you know, that stem from the levels of meaning, those facets of cosmic meaning. And the first one is the facets of self-control. Oh, yeah, we've been just talking about that. We've perfected that. We have a perfectly purposed self now. There is full self-mastery before I could get into Havona. So I am the embodiment of the potential of this cosmic structure, the facets of self-control. Next was the facets of personal responsibility. And in there, one of those is cosmic fairness. Okay? Those fasts are divine obligations. Universe fraternity, cosmic fairness, social equity. When I say, does that sound like maybe the social and economic activities? All right, see? You may have, you know, now embody, and it's just totally natural, these facets of self-control. You don't even think about them anymore, really. You just are you. But the facets of personal responsibility are not only still in play, they're now really up front, and you can really get at those like you never could before, like you were saying. You can really take on manifesting the full cosmic expression of the facets of personal responsibility. Divine obligations, universe fraternity, cosmic fairness, and social equity. Okay? So that's, they're actually, see, between the lines, alluding to that, those facets. And where are those presented? Well, clarifying a paper on the Lucifer Rebellion. The True and False Liberty section. Mm. Yeah. Okay? Yeah, you've totally overcome the pitfalls of the contrast between true and false liberty. You can take on the potential of those cosmic levels. Okay, so that's what they're getting at. And just notice doing things the way they should be done. The challenge that should be to you right now of your, what you think of as your personal creativity, and how we slip into Lucifer's sophistry about our personal creativity. Oh, I have personal creativity from God the Father. That means I can do it my way. Yeah, or the highway. Okay. That's what Lucifer convinced everyone personal creativity was about. You know, self-assertion. The battle cry of the Lucifer Rebellion. No, there is, you get into Havona, there's only one way to do a certain thing. Absolutely, period. There is no other way, and no other way is allowed, and no other way is desired. Because at that point, you recognize that that one way to do something is the way. There isn't any better way to do it. Why would you want to do it any other way? It would be not as good. So, again, see, they're trying to get you to not only liberate yourself from the sophistries of the Lucifer Rebellion, but to just establish a new relationship to the notion of law. Okay? The love that you desire can only be acquired through law. The way to the love of God is through the law of God. You must take on the form of God in order to get the love of God. You must supply favorable conditions. Remember? You can't grow yourself, but you can supply favorable conditions. You can conform to the cosmos, the law of God. And if you do, all that you desire comes automatically as a free gift.
In a way, that's so liberating. You know, you can almost flip it around and say to be freed from the fetters of trying to be creative. Just relax and do it the way it should be done.
Mm. Try to figure out how it should be done. See, it's like, well, wow, that's going to take a lot of wisdom. And yeah, that's all. Now, that you can't just consecrate your will. You have to consecrate your mind. And that's in relationship to God the Mother, which means it's in relationship to time. Consecrating the will is in relationship with God the Father. You can do that on a dime. Okay? The other part takes a lot of time and a lot of effort, all the way up to Yversa. Now, you've been working on getting this self-mastered, so that that consecration to the cosmos is your natural state. All right, now we'll try it.
All right.
the circles here.
When intelligent beings first attain the central universe, they are received and domiciled on the pilot world of the seventh Havona circuit. As the new arrivals progress spiritually, attain identity comprehension of their super universe master spirit, they are transferred to the sixth circle. It is from these arrangements in the central universe that the circles of progress in the human mind have been designated.
Let me just stop right there after that. So, you know, that's the spot in the book where they finally give you the clue, you know, remember about the psychic circles, why they chose to call them, you know, the psychic circles, the soul growth circles. You know, it's to draw an analogy in terms of that cosmic progress to this whole transcendent series of levels, you know, levels of progress. And you know, and that's why it starts with seven and goes to one instead of from one to seven, and because you start at the seventh circle of Avana and go to the first. And I think a lot of you know that, but just for any newer readers, that's the spot where they finally, you know, tell you this little parenthetical about that. And as long as I've paused there, see, so the first step is getting to the point where you are birthed out of the spiritual womb of your master spirit. Okay, it's the seventh master spirit. The seventh circle of Vona, you're working on that final spiritual birthing process. And once you're out of that spiritual womb, you can turn around and say, hello, Mr. Seventh Master Spirit. Okay? When you're inside, that's not possible. But the first thing you have to do is be able to transcend that womb that you're now maturing within, growing within. You know, you were spiritually conceived way, way before when your thought adjuster fused with your soul. That was your spiritual conception. But birth isn't until you become a four-stage spirit, a graduate spirit, and go from the seventh to the sixth circle of Avona, birthed out of that spiritual womb. Okay, so you've done that. Now you're at a level, you know, and everyone from the other six super universes has done that. And you're all at a newfound common level. Something that transcends a particular super universe. Something that we all have in common. What would we have in common? Well, we'd have the grand universe in common. We'd have the supreme in common. So not surprisingly, what happens on the next circuit, on the sixth circuit?
After ascenders have attained a realization of supremacy and are thereby prepared for the deity adventure, they are taken to the fifth circuit. And after attaining the infinite spirit, they are transferred to the fourth. Following the attainment of the eternal Son, they are removed to the third. And when they have recognized the universal Father, they go to sojourn on the second circuit of worlds, where they become more familiar with the paradise hosts. Arrival on the first circuit of Havona signifies the acceptance of the candidates of time into the service of paradise. Indefinitely, according to the length and nature of the creature ascension, they will tarry on the inner circuit of progressive spiritual attainment. From this inner circuit, the ascending pilgrims pass inward to paradise residence and admission to the core of the finality.
Okay, here's just a brief little overview of those. But the key thing is to really appreciate, to kind of incorporate into your thinking, is what they foreshadowed right at the beginning. Like I said, intellectual, spiritual, experiential, quantitative, qualitative, supreme. Okay, and notice, you don't attain a realization or even a recognition of the supreme being. That's not possible. Supreme being is nowhere to be recognized. It's a transcendental being, not in the finite. Okay, but you do come into some sort of a striking step with the functioning of deity on the supreme level. Supremacy, capital S. You're going to acquire a new measure of supreme type divinity, supremacy, lowercase s, okay? And you're going to do that because you have a personality, so you're going to do a realization process in relationship to the functioning of deity. You're going to realityize that relationship to the functioning of deity on the supreme level. And why is this so important? Why do I need to accomplish that first before I can go about the process of trying to come into relationship, you know, an initial real definitive relationship with the three infinite persons? Well, just the fact that I call them infinite persons, sounds like I'm probably going to have some kind of a prerequisite in order to achieve that. But the thing you're trying to do, obviously you can't relate to him as an infinite person. You're not an infinite being. You never will be. There's only three infinite persons. But you can achieve a relationship with them as absolute facts. The Father absolute, the absolute spirit, the absolute mind. Yeah, the first, second, and third sources and centers as absolute facts. Okay, well, if I'm going to achieve a relationship to them as absolutes, okay, I need to have achieved some prerequisite measure of absolute likeness. Okay? If I downstep absolute to ultimate and ultimate to supreme, I'm not trying to get a relationship to them as some co-absolute fact or something. When you downstep co-absolute to absonite to finite, can't do this as a... It doesn't matter how much finite I have, I can't do what I'm going to try to do here. I need some definitive measure of supremacy, because supreme is like ultimate, which is like absolute. And I can get this initial connection. So that's what you have to achieve first on the sixth circuit. It's this realization of supremacy. All right. So that's why that intellectual, spiritual, and experiential, quantitative, qualitative, and supreme, that's the real thing about that supreme part of it, is you're trying to have what it takes to engage absoluteness. Okay.
Yeah, I'm thinking somehow we're bridging the ultimate level. We can't do it by fiat. I mean,
right.
How are we getting relationship with absoluteness from the
right.
supreme level?
The secret is what else is going on, and what really comes to the fore on the second and first circuits. This very kind of vague references of the second and first circuits in here. Okay. You really begin to have to take your supremacy, this tiny little measure, this initial measure that you can achieve at this point, through ultimacy on the second circuit, heading towards absoluteness. And notice they say on the inner circuit, you're going to be there for however long it takes. You know, they will tarry on the inner circuit. Okay, tarry, however long it takes. Okay, because now you're trying to take this little, your supremacy that you've windowed through ultimacy in some way, and bring it into sync with absoluteness in a much fuller sense, because you've got to be able to go to paradise, which is timeless. You have to go to the absolute of time. You have to go to eternity. So that's, most fundamentally what you're trying to do on that first circuit is develop a mind that it can actually be in eternity to some degree. To actually have an aspect of your mind that transcends temporality. It can be in eternity. You're still going to have a part of your mind that can relate to time, because you're not going to stay in paradise forever. You're going to come back out. You're going to do all kinds of things in space and time. Okay. But you have to have this measure. So you're going from that supremacy that you can very definitively establish as a finite being, culminating in supremacy. Get that rock solid, and then you're going to thread that through ultimacy in some way that obviously I can't describe, and get it plugged into absoluteness to some degree, like the absolute of time.
Can you explain the attain identity comprehension of their super universe master spirit. So the our seventh super universe master spirit is Father, Son, and Father, Son, Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So we're supposed to attain identity comprehension of that. Father, Son, and Spirit. So how does that work, the identity comprehension?
Well,
have you thought of that?
Yeah, I mean, the key is, it's not so important about which master spirit you're talking about. Okay, so that which associative expression, you know, is it Father, Son, and Spirit, or is it just Father, or whatever? The whole point is identity comprehension. I'm within that spiritual womb. There's no way I can have an identity comprehension of the master spirit. I can't identify with him as a personality when I'm inside the womb. I have to be birthed out of it. Oh, I've identified a new person. Okay, you can't identify a person when you're inside it, so to speak. Okay, you have to transcend your master spirit to some degree. And of course, in the process of transcending your master spirit, you're going to transcend all of them to some degree. Not only will you be able to say hi to the seventh, but the other six as well.
Yeah, where'd you guys come from?
Okay. There'll be six, you know, personality identifies with a self. I'm going to be able to, as a person, recognize the personality is identified there, okay. Seven identifications that I was, you know, theretofore unable to identify. So you're literally talking about a measure of transcendence of the master spirit. And, that ought to give you some pause. Really? And that's just step one? I have to some degree transcend a master spirit? Now, see, you're not talking about any sort of a simple task. No wonder there's so many worlds on that outer circuit. This is going to be quite a challenge. And it's nothing but challenges all the way in. It doesn't get any easier. I have to try to somehow, like I was just saying, find eternity before I can go to paradise, you know, and all kinds of other things that I can't even imagine. I have to try to somehow achieve. That's why there's a billion worlds and an indefinite amount of experience that's possible. You can, you know, whatever it takes. It's possible because you have a thought adjuster. But it's not easy. You know. But you will. You'll get an initial transcendence of the master spirits, and then you'll get some synchrony with the Supreme Being, you know, which is transcendent of the master spirits. You know, move up to sevenfold. You remember you've been working your way up to sevenfold. You know, you were in a local universe with the Creator Sons and Creator Mother Spirits, then you were in the super universe with the Ancients of Days. You've found some relationship and even transcendence of the master spirits. Now you're coming into sync with the Supreme Being, and you're going into the conjoint actor and the Eternal Son and the Universal Father. On 5, 4, and 3. Okay, circuits. You know, you're working your way up the staircase of the sevenfold. Remember, that's what you're doing. To get to paradise, you got to go up the staircase of the sevenfold. It's the only way. So one step at a time, you're achieving pretty amazing feats for a lowly animal origin being. You know, a realization of capital S supremacy, you know, that again, that should give you some pause. It's like, wait a minute, capital S means it's a functioning of deity on the supreme level. That's, yeah, right. You're doing some really amazing things. But if you don't achieve that, forget about the Father, Son, and Spirit. It's impossible. You have to work your way up the sevenfold to get there. All right. And a lot of these details become much more clear when you unpack the central universe, like I've been working on, as I mentioned to you. You know, a lot of these details you can actually understand quite precisely about Once you know how the central universe is put together, you kind of, it's sort of just right in front of you there to recognize kind of some more of these details. But in a thumbnail sketch, that's what you're doing. You're working your way up from finiteness through supremacy, absoniteness, absonity, and you know, ultimacy, you know, all the way up. You're working your way up. All right.
During your sojourn in Havona as a pilgrim of ascent, you will be allowed to visit freely among the worlds of the circuit of your assignment. You will also be permitted to go back to the planets of those circuits you have previously traversed. And all this is possible to those who sojourn on the circles of Havona without the necessity of being
supernafimmed.
Yeah.
Yep.
Supernafimmed. Kind of to be like enshrined in angelic energy or something.
Well, you know, to be, you know, a transport angel.
Yeah.
You know, in this case, when you're in the central universe, it's the tertiary supernafim. One of the flavors is a transport angel.
Wow.
Okay.
The pilgrims of time are able to equip themselves to traverse achieved space, but must depend on the ordained technique to negotiate unachieved space. A pilgrim cannot leave Havona nor go forward beyond his assigned circuit without the aid of a transport supernafim.
Okay, and I think it was Chris that kind of alluded to this last time, this passage about equipping themselves. You know, very fascinating idea of, it's like, well, in what way am I talking about, some sort of a jetpack I'm putting on? What am I doing here? How am I equipping myself? I mean, all you can say is, you know, in some way, because we know, you know, this is all very literal what the transport angels are doing, whether they're supernafim or seraphim. You know, they're locking on to energy currents and surfing them, riding them, you know, going with the flow of them, you know, however you want to think about it. Okay, so in some way or another, you can take on what you need to latch on to that. But it's very much, you know, you have this very steep climb that you're making in Havona, and like they're saying, you can equip yourself to go downhill or go, you know, laterally, but no way can you equip yourself to go uphill. You can't overcome, you know, that slope. You can only roll back down and then go back up again to where you were. So it just kind of, you know, in a simple little frictionless oscillation, you can go down and come back up again. But you can't go out of Havona either, you know, Sam? You know, so there's a definite barrier there, which is kind of, see, that gives you kind of an interesting, now why couldn't I go back out again? Wouldn't it be all downhill out into the super universes? And see, the fact that you can, it's like, well, okay, maybe it has something to do with, you know, I don't have, you know, what it takes to get through the dark gravity bodies. But, you know, it's like, well, eventually I'm going to, you know, get all the way to paradise and then I'm going to be able to do it. It seems like I can only get all the way back out there once I've gone up a lot higher. So you start to get this, maybe Havona has kind of a lip on it. Okay? Maybe you kind of have to go up and then down in. You know, and it's a big lip. And so you can't get back out again until you've gone all the way up, transcending the height of that lip, as it were. See? And you actually see that when you unpack the central universe. You can see that that nature of how it's put together. That it actually is, you know, in some senses kind of bowl-shaped. Okay. all right. Yeah, but eventually, then we won't need the tertiary supernafim, and we can equip ourselves fully. And the thing that really gives you that ability to go, here, there, and everywhere. It's like they tell you about the Trinity origin beings. Remember, as a finaliter, you take your oath to whom? Or, yeah, even saying whom is kind of, yeah, just as a paradise Trinity, not the Father, the Son, or the Spirit. You're very much now part of the Trinity's functioning. You're a hand of the paradise Trinity. And just like the Trinity origin beings, that gives you the ability to really lock on and go anywhere. That totality attitude aspect of the Trinity, see, you'll have a measure of that totality attitude. And so at least to the limits of the grand universe, expression of the Trinity, you know, you'll be able to go anywhere you want on your own. All right, let's see, is there anything else? And then who'd like to jump in and read here? You want to read? Okay. But the one little thing, the fact that achieved, you know, like an achieved space, definitely keep in mind that you aren't just going through a series of experiences here in the central universe, and they're in one ear and out the other. You know, you're very definitively acquiring constantly. Every step you take, you're larger than you were, you know, before you took that step. Very definitively acquiring, you know, achieving a new relationship with reality, and it realityizes within you. Okay. Think of it very literally. That's something we've mentioned a number of times, that the revelation is trying to get us to think very definitively, literally about our experiences. You know, like when they say, as a finaliter, you are your experiences. You've definitively acquired and embodied what you've experienced.
After you've gone through all those circles in Havona, then you have to go through the dark gravity bodies in order to get to paradise.
No, the dark gravity bodies are on the outside, around the circumference of the central universe. You go through them to get to the seventh circuit.
Oh, you mean to get to Havona?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What you pass by, in between the first circuit and paradise are the three paradise circuits. Circuit of the Spirit, Circuit of the Son, Circuit of the Father. You know, you'll fly by those from the first circuit on your way to paradise. And remember, you've been able to visit Ascendington ever since you got to Havona. But the other five, you know, you're never going to go to Divinington. But the other five worlds of the Father, you'll be able to then come back and visit after you've become a finaliter.
So once you make that choice to pass through and get to the Havona world,
mm-hmm.
Is it that you don't want to leave? Or is that the next progression step, that you will just be on that evolutionary highway?
Yeah. You are being drawn insatiably,
right,
towards the source of that spirit fragment within you. Remember, it's a literal spirit fragment. Spirit gravity has a hold of it, and it is pulling on you. And once you get a little bit cured of love of self, you are going to be so intrigued by the pull that you feel on the core of your being. You want to know where the end of that rope is.
Right,
what's pulling me? I want to go there.
That's why they say you cannot leave until you complete it.
Well, if you're from one of the super universes other than the seventh, you might have an experiential deficit that makes it so that you can't yet achieve either the Spirit, the Son, or the Father, one of the three, and you might have to go back out to a different super universe and get a little bit more experience, acquire, you know, what it takes, then come back in. So there are examples where you do leave, come back, pick up right where you left off. Okay. In our case, since we have both Father, Son, and Spirit flavor here that we're, sort of marinating in. We'll have the juice, as it were, to do it. May take a long time. We have no idea, about the time of it. But we won't be going back out. We'll just methodically work our way through until we're finaliters, and then we'll head back out. And maybe just that reminded me. Remember it's not just mortals. For instance, you could have a seraphim working their way through Havona too. It's finally gotten on an ascension track. Okay, et cetera. But in particular, the reason I mentioned the seraphim, they have to be in Sapernaphim too. Okay, there was only transport angels. Transport. Other angels have to be transported.
I never thought of that before. I always thought they're flying.
That's why each of those groups are systems of angels. I should say it that way. There's one of the facets of that system is a transport angel, and that's just what they are, is a transport angel, because they're definitively different being. They can, envelop. Remember, that's one of the secrets of the Father's worlds, that whole ability for those particular flavors of angels to envelop another being and transport them. All right, let's see. All right, so now we can get going now.
There is a refreshing originality about this vast central creation. Aside from the physical organization of matter, and the fundamental constitution of the basic orders of intelligent beings and other living things, there is nothing in common between the worlds of Havona. Every one of these planets is an original, unique, and exclusive creation. Each planet is a matchless, superb, and perfect production. And this diversity of individuality extends to all features of the physical, intellectual, and spiritual aspects of planetary existence. Each of these billion perfection spheres has been developed and embellished in accordance with the plans of the resident Eternal of Days. And this is just why no two of them are alike.
That last sentence, in other words, each personality of an Eternal of Days, absolutely unique, hence each world is absolutely unique. And notice right there, individuality, and this diversity of individuality. Remember, that's what you're having, a completely transcendent, unimaginable new relationship with. Individuality, like you've never imagined it could express itself. Okay? That's what you're coming into a relationship there, and the very worlds drip with this fact that you're striving for. You go to the next world, it's like, oh, I had no idea individuality could, okay, I've got to totally rethink everything. I thought individuality is this. No, it's this. And then you go to the next world. Oh, no. It's this. The individuality just goes higher and higher and higher. A billion times you have this transcendent experience of just what transcendent individuality awaits you when you start to unleash your personality. Okay. And that's just, think about how different this notion of heaven is. Havona is the new heaven, quote unquote. Think how different this heaven is than olden notions of heaven, where it's all about some sort of white light that you are just kind of a vague, fuzzy form in. When movies depict heaven, they've got every floodlight in the studio on, and it's just washing everything out, and you're just this vague form, because that's what we think. It's about individuality up through associativity to unity, and that's it. And those who have really, really favor their spiritual consciousness historically have seen that, and it's like, well, okay, so that's the destiny, nirvana. the infinite white that I blend into as a drop of water in the ocean. It's like, no, that's, you know, that's not, that's just part of the picture. And that part of the picture is what you're going to stand on when you actually get to heaven, when you get to Havona. You're going to stand on that light, and there'll be, and you'll clearly see what lies above it. You know, right now you can't penetrate that white fog. No one does. Everyone, no matter how spiritual they've been for a million years, their vision fuzzes out in that fog of unity. That's at best uversa. Okay? Beyond that is a whole new transcendent destiny of individuality. You know, as a personality that with an absolute uniqueness, not a finite uniqueness, not a supreme, not absonite, not ultimate, not co-absolute, absolute uniqueness.
Do you think the uniqueness of these billion spheres has to do with the arrangement of the land masses and the water forms and the mountains? I mean, what are we talking about here?
Right.
They could have described it that way they would.
Yeah. It doesn't describe it. Right. I mean, remember, we touched on this a little bit when we first started this paper. The thing that's so incomprehensible is I can't separate the material, really, like we're wanting to visualize the landscape, from the mindful and the spiritual. There's this perfect harmony of everything there, which... So what does that do to the landscape? I don't know what that does to the landscape. It obviously doesn't make it so that you can't stand on it. It's still solid, but it's going to be much more like it's living landscape, spiritual living landscape. Remember, we've talked about this when you get up to paper 42 and they're talking about the substance of the Isle of Paradise, and they say, oh, let's just call it living matter because it's so transcendent. You know, like I say, it's distinguishable from the pure spirit of the body of the eternal Son in name only. I mean, so we have definite foretaste of that substance of the isle when you're in Havana. You have some incredible weaving together of material, spiritual, mindful energy. And what that means, I have no idea what that means, you know. They've said it several times. I mean, it's just not describable. You can't even begin to comprehend what it is.
Yeah.
Yep.
When he said, "Be perfect, even as I am perfect," he is love, and so our capacity to love is going to be. It's what becomes infinite and or. Absolute.
Well, and think about how that works. So I've completed the process of this consecration of my will to the perfect will of the Father, who is love, before I enter Havana. Okay, so why don't I just go right from Uversa to Paradise? Why do I have to go through all this rigmarole of a billion worlds? Okay, because it's not just love. It's loving service. Okay, remember the difference between the mere spiritual fruits of the Spirit and the cosmic fruits of the Spirit. Okay, your ability to manifest loving service has been shackled until you get to Havana. You'll think you've been doing all kinds of service, but no, not until your personality is actually set free. Which it isn't until you've done all the preparatory work to achieve that perfection of purpose that gets you into Havana. Now you're going to actually begin to acquire. Remember, we were just talking about achieving, acquiring. We're going to acquire a nature that can manifest loving service in its full expression. Not just shadows of it, not just downstepped expressions of it. I'm now in the pattern universe. The source of loving service out here. I'm going to directly acquire loving service nature from the headwaters? Is it, you know, from where it flows out in seven rivers out into the super universes? Okay, I'm going to immerse myself in those headwaters and acquire fundamental loving service nature, and then I'm going to go out and now I'm going to serve, okay, in the super universes. But without the central universe, I have just love. I can't yet manifest it. I'm going to go out revealing God the Mother, loving service, not just love.
Service is almost like the new currency.
Mm-hmm.
If everyone...
The economy.
The economy. Yes, if everyone behaves that way, that's the economy and that's the new currency.
Right. See? The economy of Havana.
Well, you can't discount feelings.
No, I mean, we have no idea. See, that's what I'm trying to get at. Remember, you always feel. I mean, and we think we can feel. No, it's like, no, you have no idea. Wait until you are really something. The feelings you have, okay? And you know, you begin to recognize just how bottled up those feelings have been for billions of years. Okay, and then you're standing on the aisle, and finally, through the conductors of worship, you acquire the nature that can let that out. See, even that, you don't have the nature yet to actually express true worship. You can't handle, but you can't express it. It's locked up inside of you. It wants to flow out, and it can't. Okay? You have to acquire the nature. No amount of wishful thinking will allow it to manifest. It takes real work. You know, remember how they started this all out? Telling you this is all a long test. On your rancher, you pass through a short and intense test. I'm done with tests. No, it's nothing but, it's an experiential universe. Okay? You're constantly put to the test. Can you acquire this? Do you have teachable mind? Can you get anything to go in? Or does it just flow off? And you feel it flow over. You go, oh, I felt so good. Let's do that again. Pour some water on me again. Ah, I feel so good. No, you have to get the water of life inside of you. You can't just let it wash over you. It's not just a baptism that gets you to paradise. Dunked in the water, Jordan or otherwise. Okay, you have to bring that within you. It has to flow in you, through you, and then back out again in loving service. Okay? And what's been happening up to this point, it started to flow in, but it can't yet flow out as you'd love it to. And you're starting to feel it, the pressure kind of building up. And if you finally open the floodgates and there's no blockage anymore, when you have finished the test with the conductors of worship, and you've been taught, you've acquired what it takes to finally let it all flow through you, and you unleash a torrent, okay, of the river of life, and you unleash it until you're finally satiated. It's like, okay, I finally, you know, don't feel like I've got, you know, this big puddle that I can't get out. I've let it. And of course, you don't drain yourself. It immediately fills up, you know, but it's flowing through. You know, there's no pressure anymore. Now, all of that spiritual tension that even now is building up in us, you know, our idealism is constantly feeling this tension and wishing that, can't the cosmos just flow through people? Can it just be better? Why is it not flowing? You know, we're all tense about it. Finally, you know, that's all liberated. You know, and... But it none of it happens automatically. Every single step of the way, you have to choose. You have to choose to realityize that fact. You have to purpose the self, and then you have to. One must do something as well as be something. Just being a perfectly purposed self is not enough. Just a relationship with God the Father is not enough. If it was, there wouldn't be the central universe. You go right from your versa to out of paradise. One must do something as well as be something. That's why there's a central universe. Remember, it's about supremacy. That's how the Supreme Papers start. One must do something as well as be something.
We're developing the forms, the mind of forms, yeah, that the love can flow through,
right,
in the proper channels.
That everything can flow through. I mean, of course, first and foremost, you want to have love flow. You don't want it to be a noun. You want it to be a verb. You want it to be so that you can't even just use love. The only way to properly express it is to put an ing on it, so that it is really definitively a verb. No doubt about it. Loving service, not just love. And that getting an ing added to it takes time. It's this huge process to actually get that realityized and become this part of this dynamic living cosmos. It doesn't just feel love. It is, you are love. Love flows through you. And to be able to, to flow through you and engage, so you can just think about, why do I need all this individuality acquirement? You want to be able to make that highest of unity hit its mark. Come down and bless an individual. You need to know about individuality. You need to know how to bring unity to individuality. It's like, okay, I get up to unity. Now I need to figure out how to get unity to individuality, in order to take it from love to loving service. You need the central universe. You climb up, and then, see, there's two phases. Acquire love, and then acquire the ability to serve. All right.
Not until you traverse the last of the Havona circuits and visit the last of the Havona worlds will the tonic of adventure and the stimulus of curiosity disappear from your career. And then will the urge, the forward impulse of eternity, replace its forerunner, the adventure lure of time.
We were just talking about that adventure lure of time. That I feel it drawing me, and it's really intriguing. Now. There'll be a new motivation beyond that. But look at that. This is really fun. You'll see it in the next paragraph, too. The tonic of adventure. It's like, well, why did they say tonic? What does tonic mean? You look at, well, it means stimulus. Oh, okay. Well, why did they just say the stimulus of adventure and curiosity? They just couldn't resist. They wanted to start to get you to think about Havona. In the Celestial Artisan paper, there's a wonderful little sentence. It says, harmony is the speech of Havona. Tones. Harmony. Okay? To try to let that sort of kind of metaphorical thought somehow be more substantive. I'm in Havona, and tonic is going to be literal somehow. It'll literally be a tone. Harmony is the speech of Havona. Okay? I will have come into a relationship with the actuality of harmony. I will be part of the tones of the cosmos. I will be attuned to the cosmos. God the Mother. The Father gives you a personality, the potential for harmony. Who is the actuality of harmony? Not the Father. Father is prior to separation that can be harmonized. The Mother is the actuality of harmony. And you're consecrating your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. And the tonic of adventure. And then look at how they play with the word tone again in the next paragraph.
Monotony,
is indicative of immaturity of the creative imagination and inactivity of intellectual coordination with the spiritual endowment. By the time an ascendant mortal begins the exploration of these heavenly worlds, he has already attained emotional, intellectual, and social, if not spiritual, maturity.
Okay, that last little part, like we were saying, perfection of purpose, a perfectly mastered self. Yeah, it's just another way of saying it. You've already perfectly mastered the self. You have already attained emotional, intellectual, and social, if not spiritual, maturity. Okay, that's done. The father part's done. Yeah. Now it's about the mother. You know, and look what they're doing again. You know, if there's monotone, monotony, okay, that means you haven't actualized the potentials of your personality very much. The immaturity of creative imagination, you know, personality gives you creative imagination. And inactivity of intellectual coordination. Mother word. All right. Are you part of the harmony? Or are you monotone? You know, or of course, there's an obvious subtext here. You know, as you reflect on your life here, do you catch yourself often? You know, this is so monotonous. Bored. Do you find yourself? Do you find yourself thinking that? Ah, that's a self that needs some mastering. That's a self that doesn't know harmony. It knows the monotone tone of a singular self. Okay. And it actually gets, you know, the notion it tends to do is exalt that monotone and demand that the whole universe be tuned to it. And the whole universe would be just of me. Okay. Gives a whole new definition to do re mi, huh? Do re mi. Okay. Yes. See that? See, that's the subtle subtext there. It's like, wait a minute. I resemble that remark. I need to do something about that. If you ever get into that mode, you need to think about actualizing some of your potentials here, okay? Because nothing is really monotonous. It's a universal harmony, not an isolated harmony. It's a universal harmony. It's a cosmos, okay? And the extent to which it appears to be monotonous is the extent to which you don't see what's real. You know, now is a divine dispensation. Do you see it? Or are you bored? It's all over in here. I mean, just I've been trying to point out. I mean, whose domain is Havona? It's the Paradise Trinity's domain. It's about the mother. Okay. all right.
Not only will you find undreamed of changes confronting you as you advance from circuit to circuit in Havona, but your astonishment will be inexpressible as you progress from planet to planet within each circuit. Each of these billion study worlds is a veritable university of surprises. Continuing astonishment, unending wonder, is the experience of those who traverse these circuits and tour these gigantic spheres. Monotony is not a part of the Havona career.
Harmony is the speech of Havona. See, you could even put a parenthetical on that, see? And there's even a little subtle thing about the uniqueness of each world. Notice how they describe is a university. Each of the study worlds is like a university. Wait a minute, university, one turning. It's universe-like. I mean, it's all the central universe. That's the real universe. It's not like each world is literally a universe. But it must be sort of. There must be some kind of separate mindal domain to each world. And if there's a mindal domain that has a degree of separateness, there must be mother differentiation. There's a big womb, but they're telling you that there's sort of like sub-wombs. Each world is a veritable university. That's again, it's another, you know, the specifics of that's another thing that you can unpack as you begin to understand exactly what's going on in the central universe. Okay? How that's achieved, precisely how are those words true? Okay. And you'll see, as you know, next time when we get into the next section, they mention that very specifically about the distinctness of the mindal domains on each world. Okay, but that's the very fact that they're saying university. See, that's, you know, if you figured out the mother part of the picture, yeah, there's a quasi womb there. In other words,
love of adventure, curiosity, and dread of monotony. These traits inherent in evolving human nature were not put there just to aggravate and annoy you during your short sojourn on Earth, but rather to suggest to you that death is only the beginning of an endless career of adventure, an everlasting life of anticipation, an eternal voyage of discovery.
Well, instead of using that indirect method of trying to hint that, why didn't they just tell me that? did you find yourself kind of saying that to yourself? As you're, you know, but rather to suggest to you that death is only, you know, it's like, wow, that's kind of indirect, guys. I mean, couldn't you just like laser beamed it right to me? Oh, laser, no. I'm supposed to be acquiring a relationship with the experiential deity. I'm supposed to slowly grow, acquire this. I'm not supposed to be just given all this by fiat. I'm not supposed to have a paper about God the Mother in the book. I'm supposed to develop a relationship to the whole and then discover the individuality that's in that whole. Okay? It's not supposed to be handed to you on a silver platter. That's the whole point. You're trying to acquire a relationship with experiential deity through a process of growth.
That's why even Jesus said it's attempted realization.
Yeah. Right.
You don't want to try to grasp it too tight with your intellect, right, and just squeeze it, because right, it'll just go right through. Right. It's too...
And in fact, the more you try to will it into existence, the farther you're getting from it. Okay? Right. No, you need to let go and let yourself be with it and grow with it and slowly acquire it through this experiential process. I just love the way they weave all this so wonderfully together like this. And of course, what's the subtext there if it's not obvious? They were not just put there to aggravate and annoy you during your, remember how that other spot in the book when they tell you stop trying to cram eternity into this little life, you don't need to jump off of every cliff, to try to acquire every imaginable experience, before you're 50. Okay. See that desire for adventure. That desire for tonic, invigorating splashes of excitement on your cheeks, like a stiff aftershave, the commercials. Recognize that the hugeness of what you feel is huge because it needs to spread out over all time. Stop trying to cram it all into the moment. You know? See it unrolling over time. All right. And the last little bit here.
Curiosity, the spirit of investigation, the urge of discovery, the drive of exploration, is a part of the inborn and divine endowment of evolutionary space creatures. These natural impulses were not given you merely to be frustrated and repressed. True, these ambitious urges must frequently be restrained during your short life on Earth. Disappointment must be often experienced, but they are to be fully realized and gloriously gratified during the long ages to come.
Of course, I kind of just said. The one fun thing there to just sit and reflect on is that opening passage, that extended parenthetical on the defining the word curiosity. And to really do a little personal assessment. Because one of the things we're struggling with, remember, on this planet is the Adamic default. None of us have the Adamic blood that we're supposed to have. And on top of that, none of us have the foundation, the blended foundation that we ought to have either. Okay. A lot of us are kind of monotone because of that, because we're not very well blended. Okay. Tone deaf. Okay. Harmony, what's that? Recognize that we're all struggling with some very serious biologic challenges. You know, this grand story that they're telling us here has an unfortunate biologic, of all things, roadblock here for us. This is so much more difficult for us to try to strike step with what they're trying to whet our appetite with here because of the rebellion and the default. So all the more you need to really soberly think about what's going on between your ears, what kind of a mindful self you got started with, and what are the real definitive challenges that your personality needs to make to that animal origin self to get it purposed. Okay? And, if you really don't feel the spirit of investigation, the urge of discovery, or the drive of exploration, you need to start challenging yourself on that. They're trying to point out that's a pretty rudimentary fact. You got to get that rolling. You can't just go, oh, whatever. Okay? You got to be curious. You've got to challenge yourself to be curious. Sangic mind is not curious. Remember? It just doesn't care, whatever. Who cares about, particle physics or whatever, blah, blah, blah. Okay. philosophy, smolosophy. The sangic mind says that. And you need to, very quietly sit down with yourself. And it's like, when I listen to myself talk, is that what myself says, or is myself curious? And if it's not, I need to kick it in the, I need to get it going. I need to be curious. They're telling me right here that's an indispensable part of the ascension career. What's your motive? I mean, what gets you out of bed in the morning?
Waiting for the tow truck.
Yeah. That's really unfortunate if that's what you're doing. We know what motivates a lot of people, you know, material-minded animal origin beings that we are, profit motive. Okay? Now, you have to be motivated by something. Okay? And that's why they say, you know, we're in a pretty primitive state. Don't try to take away profit motive, or for most people, there will be no motive at all. And they'll just be laying there waiting for the tow truck. Okay? And that's one of the problems we have in this nation, but that's another story. Okay? Okay.
What lies beyond
parking? Okay. They're talking about motivation here. A purpose cell, you know, purpose, you know, is intentions. Okay? Those start with motive. Motive through action to intentions. And that's all internal. You know? Going from the will, engaging the self, and getting it purposed. Okay? Having actual intent manifested as a purpose self, but it begins with a motive, okay, for the will. What motivates your will to act, okay? And you know, challenge it to go beyond some simple material thing. You know, even, it's like, well, I'm not going to do profit motive, I'm going to do service motive because I'm very enlightened. No, go beyond it. And notice what's there. I mean, there's not really service motive there yet, okay? Something that's more internal. Because here, when you think service motive, it's all about, okay, soup kitchens or something. You know what I mean? You think very material-mindedly about service, okay? It's this inner thing. We're talking, you know, an inner process of getting a purposed self, not dirty hands, you know, initially, okay? Can you discover this internal motive, the spirit of investigation? I want to investigate the fifth biblical revelation. I'm curious. I want to unpack it. That word, you know, I'm not quite sure what that word is. I'm going to get the dictionary out. I'm going to get off my you know what, and I'm going to get the dictionary out, and I'm going to look that thing up. You know, and if I don't like what I have in my dictionary, I'm going to go to the store and I'm going to find a better dictionary. You know, I need a really good dictionary. I'm going to have enough drive to begin to get the tools that I need, like a good dictionary, to be able to start unpacking the revelation. I'm not going to wait for God to tow me through it. It's a great analogy that Chris brought up there. Okay? All right? Spirit of investigation, the urge of discovery, the drive of exploration. You know, that's the spirit that I'm trying to convey, you know, all the time about my relationship to the fifth epical revelation. That's what motivates me. It's like, you're not going to believe it. I just discovered. This is so cool. Discovered? I thought it was just words, and you read them once, and no. It's an endless vault of discovery, okay? It should just get you up in the morning, challenging yourself to see what you can discover today in the fifth epical revelation. But you have to be willing to investigate. You know, it doesn't just fall into your head. You have to put some work into it. Okay? But once you get, you know, practiced at that a little bit, it's not as hard as you think. I mean, you learn how to use those tools. Okay? It's just like anything. You can't expect to just be born with the ability. Some ability, yeah, by birth. But a lot of it's skill. A lot of it takes effort. You need to develop the skill to investigate and discover and explore the revelation.
Chris, yeah. I would like to say that for the past week, I have been struggling just memorizing one paragraph, and I challenge everybody in this room to memorize the very first paragraph in paper 65.
Yeah. Discover how exciting it is when you can actually think the truth, when you don't just feel the truth, like I'm sure basically everyone in this room has for many, many years. It's probably why you're here. At some point in your life, at least, you've felt the truth, at least vaguely, and it was compelling, okay? thinking the truth is way cool. When you can, when that paragraph is yours, when you've incorporated it into your consciousness and you can think through it and you can re-express it in 500 different ways, you can apply it to 6 different things, you know, before you have breakfast in the morning. But I mean, that's a good, you know, get a hold of something. I mean, you know, the kind of the spirit of what she's saying there, you know. Find a spot in the book that's an on-ramp built for you and get on it. Okay, don't keep going down the interstate past all those on-ramps. Okay?
It's a whole other experience reading it and reciting it. It is like, oh.
See if you can begin to get into it. You know, whatever it takes for you. You know, what it takes for Maria will be different than what it takes for Chris, and it takes for Pam, okay, and what it takes for me. But do something. You know, actually, you know, don't just be with it. You know, one must do something, you know. Try to find a way to really start getting it flowing through you where you can think along with this dynamic thing that's now in your head. You're not just looking at some, you know, some points, you know, in your memory, okay? You're going with the flow. You're thinking in, thinking the truth. You want to get to the point where, at the very least, when you, if you post a quote, you know, or you use a quote in something you're writing, you don't just put it in your document because you like the way those words feel. Okay, no, you like the way those words think. Okay, it's your thoughts, not your feelings, that lead you Godward.
It's presenting to your mind. Right. When you look at them and you read them again, and you can't quite rephrase it in your own words, and you want to share it because it's increasing the capacity of your awareness of your mind, but you haven't gotten to the point where you can, you know, digitize within that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's you know.
Yeah. You put it out there, you know, at the very least, is, can you strike step with this?
I mean,
this feels so cool. I am working my, you want to tell people, I'm working my darndest to try to think this paragraph. Because I know if I can think this paragraph, it's going to change my whole life.
Yeah,
you know?
It's going to give you a whole new framework.
Right. I will finally be obeying the truth, not just knowing the truth. You want to get that. It's a revelation of truth. Everything is an on-ramp to that incredible flow of truth. Just pick some point and get on it. You know? All right, so this will actually work pretty well, the fact that we spent the whole evening on that section. We'll have plenty of time then to do the big section in, you know, next time, this great big final section. All right, so let's take a moment here.